We've won again!
This is good. But what is best in life?
How about global thermonuclear war?
Wrong!
I would summon a demon more ferocious than all in hell!
Wrong!
Have a good day, Marshall.
Wrong!
Conan! What is best in life? Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, the yellow lamentation of the women.
Contemplate this on the tree of woe.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Hello, everyone, and welcome. We are here for episode 3 of Garage Gamer. This is the other show on our show. Tonight we're going to be talking about the Kings of War by Mantic Games
and Alessio Cavatore.
That's right. Well, yep, that's right.
Yep.
He's the one who wrote it.
Yep. So let's get into it.
Yeah, well, let's do so. Now, normally we'd like to start about talking a little bit about fluff, but here's the one glaring weakness of Kings of War.
It doesn't have any.
Not really. We know there's a guy named Morgoth.
Yeah, and you can go, I mean, if you go to their website and you look under the specific model types,
mm-hmm.
there's like a paragraph or two of story about that unit and something happening.
It's pretty trim.
Yeah, and then there's like, oh, you should buy this unit because it's great because they have XYZ. It's pretty, as far as actual fluff goes, and I like my fluff, so I'm sad not to see any. But luckily, folks, and we'll give you a little hint here in the beginning of the episode, that's probably the biggest flaw issue I've got with the whole game.
I couldn't agree more. The game itself is really quite remarkably good. Should point out by saying that we realize, of course, that being Garage Gamer, a vast majority of our listeners are listening from the perspective of being a Warhammer player.
That's true.
Which means you already have Warhammer figures. There's just no excuse not to get these rules for free and give them a try.
Yeah. Here's free rules for another game that you already probably have models for.
I mean, unless you only have time for Warhammer in your life and you're just that strict about it, then you really should, you owe it to yourself to give this game a try.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree 100%. Now, before we really jump into the meat of this here, I would like to just say that sitting across from me, in case you don't know, if this is your first tune in, you just downloaded, this is sitting across from me is Mr. Christopher Barnett.
And sitting to my right is Mr. David Witek.
That's me.
All right.
So, do you want to just kind of go through the... Oh, you've got the book right in front of you. So,
I do.
They have a very... I guess we're going to approach this somewhat from a Warhammer-y perspective, since most of our listeners play Warhammer. They'd have an idea. But this is by no means... I mean, it has the similar armies, you know, like the stereotypes, your elves, your dwarves, your orcs.
Sure, it's a generic fantasy realm. We don't have much fluff to go with, so we
right.
just know that it's generic fantasy.
It is ranked up units of miniatures.
Well, we can talk about briefly. Alessio Cavatore and Ronnie Renton sat down, and mm-hmm. it was Alessio's ambition to write a complete set of rules. In 12, 13 pages or less. And what a success this has ended up being.
This is 12 pages with pictures, with illustration.
Right.
So it's not like 12 pages of dense text. This is 12 pages of rules with illustrated examples. I know when it first came out, I basically kind of thought this was an excuse to say, look, we have a game. We're not just models that, you know, we're not just cutting into GW business by giving you less expensive models of what they already make. And that was basically my best hope was, let's hope it doesn't suck. I don't know exactly what you were thinking when it came out, Christopher.
I'm always optimistic to try a new set of rules.
Oh, I'm always ready to try a new set of rules. But, I mean, when I heard it was 12 pages and it was just sort of...
See, I think rule design is fascinating. I love the idea behind it, and I love to put my mind toward, okay, if you tweak this, what happens? If you tweak this, what happens? Alessio's been doing it for a long time, and I was really curious to see, without any restraints, what he came up with. And so I'm relieved to say that it's as good as I was hoping it would be. I'm delighted to say... It's better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you. I've got to agree with you 100% on that.
To the extent that this is now not just a pastime to try once in a while, I'm kind of eager to play it again.
Yeah.
I can't wait to be in a tournament using these rules.
Yeah. In fact, if we didn't have something else going on tonight after we're done recording this, I would have suggested we play a game of this.
Well, this is Garage Gamer. We can talk about it freely. Afterwards, yeah, we're going to practice another game of War Machine. Warmahords.
Yes, I played my first game with the Troll Bloods yesterday.
You know, this is a good venue for it. Talk about it briefly. So you get a chance to play against our friend Steve Lechman, and you played your Troll Bloods.
Uh-huh.
He was practicing with his Legion of Everblight.
It was a 15-point game.
Just a mangled metal, or what's the Hordes equivalent? I don't know what it's called, but it was basically just
mangled
a couple of...
metal Hordes? I don't know.
I have no idea. I know this from the War Machine side, less the Horde side.
For people who know what it was, I took the starter box. I took part of that. I took the Ironhide.
Madric Ironhide.
Madric Ironhide.
You took an Axer?
I took one Axer, one Pyre Troll, and one...
Mauler.
Mm-hmm. And... it was interesting.
Yeah, he had two of the little tiny guys. I don't know what they're called.
I don't either.
They're lesser war beasts. Huh? Are they
Shredders?
Shredders.
And then he had that big thing, the Carnivax.
Carnivian. And he had Hesperax. Is that her name? Lilith?
The girl with the bow.
The girl with the bow, yeah. Eyeless
and he had one
on
other
everything.
Model, the smaller, but the smaller war beast, the light
wings
war beast.
Wings and a sword with reach, right?
Right. And... It was fun. It was interesting. It was different. I could do a whole hour on talking about my experience with Hordes, and we're actually here to talk about Kings of War.
Maybe we'll
save that for the next episode or something.
Good point.
Okay. Harrison, could you grab me that list off the printer? But so why don't we just kind of go through, I mean, it's 12 pages. We can go through the book in order and really cover the rules in general and then get into our experiences
Let's approach it from a perspective so that they can grasp on. So
Okay. The
biggest difference is between, like, Warhammer and Kings of War. You play in top and the bottom of the inning, just like in Warhammer.
Uh-huh.
You play three phases instead of four. First movement, then shooting, then melee. And you basically combine shooting and magic into one phase.
The magic works basically kind of almost like shooting.
The rules for shooting are the same for magic. They're combined into one.
Mm-hmm.
Any magic you have is a shooting attack.
Right. So if you have a character, and usually it's only characters that are going to have multiple things like this to do.
So far.
Or maybe monsters, you know.
Well, monsters and heroes are often combined into one model
type. And, like, I know I was playing the undead, mm-hmm. and my guy could either cast, like, the equivalent of a fireball, or he could heal his unit, or he could make him surge forward, but he can only do one thing.
But all of those with three different effects were combined into one shooting attack, and you might be attacking me, in which case it would have a negative effect, you'd cause damage, or it could have a positive effect. For every point of quote-unquote damage, instead each point counts as an inch of movement. It doesn't hurt you, you just surge forward.
Right, so that's how the phases kind of go together. Now, setting up an army list... I guess I would suggest, now we started, our first game was really 2,000 points. If you want to get a feel for the game, you may want to do like a 1,500. Only because you do get, I mean, it's a lot, I mean, it's...
The whole purpose behind Mantic is building big armies. And 2,000 points, for us, was a big game.
I mean, it's funny because it's a lot of models, but it's really, each model in the unit is its own piece on the whole.
When you play Warhammer, a unit is 20 individual models that you've put together into a unit. They act as one piece, but it's 20 models.
And as they die, you remove a model at a time. Each model is its own individual piece.
Right.
In this, I've got a unit, whether it's 5 or 40.
It's one piece.
It's one piece. The models are never removed.
The unit is a single playing piece.
Which makes it very simple to build an army list.
It also means that if, for example, your pieces are magnetized, cleanup is a snap. Because when the unit dies, you take off the whole unit. You don't have to remove single models. We found cleanup to be so easy that if we had slightly more time, we could have played two games in the time it would have taken us to play one game of Warhammer when you include all the cleanup.
Yeah. The other part that goes really was really interesting is this opens up a lot of opportunities for modelers.
As we've mentioned before on several other shows,
it
allows you to use almost a diorama approach to your units.
Yeah. So let's talk about the units then.
If you're now,
there's different unit types. There's war machines, which is basically a war machine and a couple of crew.
Yeah.
There's heroes and monsters.
Well, they
and
call
some
them war engines. Let's use the terminology they use.
War engines, which consists of a single war machine and it has a crew, but they're purely decorative. So it's basically your war engine.
It's the war engine, right.
Then you've got heroes and monsters. And
if you have crew, you should be gluing it on the same base as the war engine.
Right. Because, it is decorative.
It has one stat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then you have a hero or a monster.
Hero slash monster. Hero could be on a single base, or it can be on a monster base, depending on whether or not you're mounted, for example,
right.
on a dragon or a chariot or whatever.
Do any of these armies have monsters that don't come with a hero?
Don't know the answer.
Okay.
I don't believe so. The elves have a dragon. The abyssal dwarves have great abyssals.
Oh, yeah, look. Okay, I'm sorry. They have either a beast or a leader or a combination. So I guess they must, if they don't have them now, they have plans for having just monsters.
I'm not aware of it right now. The orcs have what would be the equivalent of a wyvern. The chaos dwarves have the equivalent of either great Taurus or Lamassu.
I have a dragon.
You have a dragon? Zombie dragon?
I guess so. I mean, it's what he rides. I forget what it's called exactly. We'll get to that. I just want to kind of cover the different unit types.
The takeaway from all this is that you do not build your units individually on choosing how many models. You've got templates. You're either going to be buying this in 5 or 10 or 20 based on your army list.
Mm-hmm.
So
now cavalry comes in 5s and 10s.
Yeah.
Elite infantry usually start at 5 and
from
go
five
to 10
to 20.
Regulars
usually come 10 to 20 to 40.
It can. I've had some that are 15.
Yeah, you've got the
10,
unusual
15,
numbers.
30.
Right.
According to the rules, and basically when you buy a unit, you don't even get to choose its real formation. They're ranks of 5. They're going to be one rank of 5 up to 6, depending on the unit type.
The terminology will tell you. If it's mm-hmm. regiment, it's 5 wide. If it says it's a horde,
it's 10
wide.
And you have the total stats for the entire unit. Since the unit is one piece, each unit comes with stats.
So in combat, this means that you don't have complicated problems of who and how many models can fight and what does this guy have. It's one stat. It's very simple.
Yep.
And I'd like to encourage people to not judge too early. This sounds too simple. This sounds like it would be boring.
It really did sound too simple. And then as we were playing it, we're like, hey, wait a minute. You could do this. And hey, wait. Oh, wait. This is really great. I mean,
it looks like Warhammer. You think it's going to play like Warhammer, but this is a different creature. It's a different game.
And I know this is going to sound like a weird example, but I thought of this today. I was telling it to Harrison. I remember the first time, and I know this is going to sound way off. A lot of people, when they went to go see Harry Potter, the first movie, first time, they went, that sucked. It was nothing like the book. Now, if you compare it to the book.
I said about half of that. I said it sucked.
Right. Well, no, I'm saying if you compare it to the book,
yeah, I hated that, too.
It usually sucks. Now,
I agree. They both suck.
Give me a break, okay? Come on, let me get through this. I want to do it quick.
Okay, go ahead.
This is the same thing. If you're going to sit around and compare this game to Warhammer, you can sit and complain all day. The magic phase isn't as in-depth.
Complain until you try it.
Exactly. But it's not... They're so not the same thing. They look similar because they're big armies on big unit bases. Mm-hmm. This is so not that game.
It's a different game.
And it's a lot of fun. It's easy, it's quick, but there's still so much you can do with
it. But it's not... easy and simplistic.
No.
It's easy to pick up, but it will challenge you to master it when compared against another player of equal skill.
It's subtle, and parts of it are subtle, like we're going to talk later. You still have the whole, can I get into the flank? Can I get into the rear? The same difficulties of strategy are still there. It's just the execution of the actual combat phase is really just so wonderfully simple.
Let's talk about some comparisons then. When you look at a unit, you've got a unit of, let's just say you've got, you know, 5x4, a big block of 20 guys.
Okay.
One thing that in Warhammer you consider the command, you know, a champion,
uh-huh.
a musician, and a standard bearer. In Kings of War, you're always going to have a model that is designated as the champion. You're not paying for him. He's just in there.
And he doesn't really have any different stats.
No. He's just a part of the unit. But the reason you know he's there, he's always going to be in a 5-model wide unit. He's always in the middle. The reason he's there is that is the model that tells you whether or not you have line of sight.
Because he's calling the shots. And if he can't see it, it's not happening.
So it makes you have one model to look at. Can this model see it? Yes or no?
Which is... simple and easy.
Makes it easy. Yeah.
If you're going 10 wide, he's either going to be in the number 5 spot or the number 6 spot in the front row.
Correct.
But he has to be in the middle or, like I said, closest to it.
Right.
Now, there are more command models.
Some. I don't know if every regiment is allowed to take them, but most
not
can.
Not everyone. Like, I know my ghouls can't.
Okay. Makes sense.
There are a musician and a standard bearer, and we'll get into what they do later.
They have different roles, yeah.
They actually do each have a specific rule, but it doesn't come into play until like the end of the combat round. So
it's comparable roles, comparable ideas,
yes.
But translated into this game.
Yes.
Now there are arcs. There are front arcs and side arcs and rear arcs, and it works exactly the same as it does in Warhammer.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that if you want to charge something, you need to be in the front arc, and your champion needs to be able to see them.
Now, the rules for unit creation are a little bit different. Because the unit comes pretty much in a set size for a block, you pick the block size, and then it will give you your options.
Right.
Your musician, your standard bearer become more expensive in a bigger unit. Your other options will become higher in a bigger unit, but they're just listed with the unit. What is interesting is the rules. There's no percentages or no slots. If you have a unit, for every unit of at least 20 infantry or the full unit of 10 cavalry,
it then allows you
one. Now, you could take one unit of 20 infantry and take a hero and a war engine.
Correct.
Yeah, because you could have one of each. So,
every one, you get one of either of those other two categories.
Right.
One from the hero monster, one from the war engine.
There's the only limitation, and I'll be honest with you. Now, just to give a quick example of what you can get in a 2,000-point game, and I kind of tricked this out a bit, 2,000 points. I get a healer character, a choppy lord, a BSB, two catapults, a unit of 10 cav, a unit of 5 cav, a unit of 5 wraiths, a horde of 40 graveguard equivalents, another unit of 40, three units of 20 ghouls, a unit of 40 ghouls, a unit of 20 skeletons, another unit of 20 skeletons. That's my 2,000-point list, folks.
It's huge.
It's freaking ridiculously huge.
When Dave and I sat down to play our very first game, we thought 2,000 points would be nice and conservative. And what we ended up having to do was scrape the corners of our collections to make sure that we could actually get it all on the table. And for me, I played Abyssal Dwarves, so that's Chaos Dwarves. And I've got plenty.
Now, don't let that deter you. Exactly.
Well, what it means is if you want to play a normal game, maybe start with 1,500.
Exactly.
But this system allows for a bigger game. Now, I'll tell you what, that bigger game we ended up playing
was awesome.
Was a scream. Yeah, it was cool.
Another thing that I could suggest here is because you never take a model off your movement tray.
Right.
And I told this to Luke. I said, even if, let's say, because what are the five armies? We got orcs, dwarfs, abyssal dwarfs, elves, and
undead.
Undead, so five armies.
And there are two more coming that we're aware of.
Yes, and if you don't play any of those equivalents, let's say you just don't have the models, you could proxy anything you want.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, if you had a movement tray, a 40 horde, 10 by 4 that was the right size, with a name tag on it,
You can
still play because you never have to put on or take off a model.
If you just want to try the game, proxying is a snap just with a cardboard with the right size.
But it's literally, you could just have a whole bunch of movement trays and get away with it. I wouldn't suggest it.
Well,
it
it's more fun. You play Warhammer, obviously. You're listening to this show. Pull your models out and give it a try.
But that's, you know, there's all sort. I mean, you build, they're not kidding, you're building big armies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like you said, you have a front rear flank, you have a unit champ. Here are your different stats. You have a stat line, it's pretty simple. Your speed, SP, how many inches can you move? Your melee rating is what you need to hit.
It's going
to
be a number with a plus. So basically, You don't compare your melee to theirs. You just, this is what you need to roll to hit them successfully.
This is how skilled of a guy you are with your weapon, and you hit everybody.
So a one is a miss, but the lower the number is, the better it is. The best I've seen, some of the orcs have a very, very easy to hit roll. Some of them have a 3+.
I've got characters who have a 3+.
Would be your elites.
My graveguard unit, my revenant troop, which is what. Yeah, they hit on 3s.
But you also pay out the nose for those guys.
They're my most expensive units too. Yeah. Oh no, I'm sorry. That's my cavalry. My 10 cav unit is 185 points, but they hit on 3s, and that's amazing.
That's very good.
Then you've got your ranged attack, which is either a dash or another something plus. That's what you hit on.
Yeah, if you've got the range, then you use your attack's characteristic, which we'll explain in a second.
Then you have a defensive rating, which is another number. Let's say a 4+. If someone hits you, they need to roll that number or higher to wound you. There's no...
Look at your own stat.
Yeah.
That tells you what you need to hit. Look at their defense. If you hit, you take that number of dice, and what their defense is what you need to wound them.
Now, with these setup armies, how many attacks do you get? Well, it's simple because it literally tells you on the unit's listing, this is how many attacks they get.
Yep. Interesting. Well, the last one is in some ways maybe the most important of all. That's the nerve. Mm-hmm. Nerve is a bit like leadership, but this is the greatest departure from Warhammer. Nerve is representation of how unlikely or unlikely this unit is to die.
Yeah, because since you don't take models off, when you get attacked, you take wounds. At the end of the round where you take wounds, they take a nerve test. Not that you roll it. Your opponent rolls it to see if they broke you. We'll get into the mechanics of that in a minute, but basically that's the number. The higher the number that is, the better, the less likely it is you are to break and run.
In a way, that's the most complicated part of the game.
Yeah, and it's really not that complicated. Once we had that, I think it took us the first like third of the game to really get that in our heads.
Well, once we figured out the most efficient way to do the math.
Right, and even then, we still haven't found real terms. I mean, you know what I'm saying? How you kind of make up your own, you know, like you roll it.
Yeah.
Like when we were playing War Machine later, when we were rolling wounds, I said, you got 6 to 1. You know, it's like, and I mean, and people who play know exactly what that means.
Right. It's 6 damage to 1 category in
right.
your war. Yeah.
And we just haven't found a little phrase for the mathematic formula yet. So
we'll get there.
But it's really, really, like I said, this is just, it's that simple. It'll tell you the troop type, and then in parentheses after troop type is the number in the unit, and then you've got it. And those are all the stats.
That's it. There are some special rules, but I think we'll get into them when we talk about armies a little bit.
Absolutely.
So the turn itself is a snap. It's going to be top and bottom of turn 1, turn 2.
Move, shoot, fight.
That's it. Move, shoot, and melee.
Actually, sort of sounds like 40K's. It's the movement, shooting, and then assault phase, which is...
Yeah. Oh, well, actually, yeah. It is. In 40K, magic is combined into the shooting phase, I think, now, isn't it?
Yep.
So it's exactly like 40K.
So,
well, there are different. What you do is you for each of your units,
So you have 1, 2. You have 7 different orders you can give for movement.
Right. They are comparable to what you can do in fantasy, but there are differences, and it's important to recognize them. Halt is the most obvious one. You're not moving at all.
Yep.
Most of the time, you're going to do something, but if you're a war engine. Halt is the only one that you can do if you want to shoot.
If you crossbows, rifles, and war engines cannot shoot if they moved at all.
Correct.
So they often will call halt, so that way can shoot.
Think about it in fantasy. You know you've got a crossbow. You know you've got a handgun. Most of those things from the Empire and the Dwarves can't move and shoot at the same time. You're going to sit still.
Yeah, it's their move or fire rule. This is similar. This one actually says with those machines, you cannot fire them unless you're called a halt in your movement phase.
So you just... I don't know if some people want to like make little templates or something where they put the order down by the unit. That might be useful.
That might, yeah. When you change your facing, since your unit size and shape doesn't change, you put your finger dead center of that model unit and you spin it on its center any way you want it to face.
So if you do the change facing order, you can just spin it on its center and make it face any direction you want.
And that's your movement.
And that's your movement.
Advance is simple enough. You could advance your...
Movement.
Movement number.
Your speed.
Yeah. And... here's the thing. You don't wheel like in Warhammer, where you wheel around that front corner, where you stop and the one corner doesn't move and the other wheels around
it. Movement's a bit simpler. It's easier to get keep track of.
You move forward. Let's say your movement is 6 inches. You move forward 4 inches and you want to turn. You move forward your 4 inches. You stop and you pivot 2 inches on the center. You don't actually pivot around the front corner of your model. You always stop and pivot around the center.
So you can move up to your speed, but at any point during your movement, one time, up to once, you may pivot up to 90 degrees.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And you can only do it once. It's not like you're curving around bushes or through trees.
Right.
You are going in a straight line with 190. It can be anywhere, beginning, middle, or end of the movement.
So in a way, it's funny because moving and turning is simpler to get your mind around in Kings of War. But in an odd sort of way, some of your troops are a lot more capable of reacting in Warhammer with swift reform plus movement plus wheeling. In a way, maneuvering is more of a challenge in Kings of War. You can turn easier, but you're more limited, as we can explain as we...
you're running at angles. You got a picture almost like if you're in geometry class, figuring out how big an angle is. It's got either 90-degree angle or 40. You move, then you pivot, then you move more. It's never going to be a curve. In a way, it's more freeing
because of the way you pivot in this game, but you have fewer ways of pivoting.
Right, right. You can move back half your movement.
Right, simple enough, and you round up.
Right, and you can move to the side, half your movement.
Again, half movement, yep. In the case of, like, I think orcs move 5, and you just move 3 to the side.
You move 3, yeah. On the double is, this one has to run straight forward.
That's the key. It's not like marching in Warhammer. If you're gonna run, it's called at the double, you're moving double
straight
your movement,
forward.
Or up to, but... double its speed, but, no turns whatsoever. You're just covering ground.
And then charge is, you can charge. Basically, that's it. And we'll get to that in a second. Let's see. You can move through friendly units.
Charging is double the speed, but they have to be in line of sight in the front arc.
Right.
Oh, we should mention, Pre-measuring?
You can always pre-measure.
At any time.
So you can actually, you will measure to see if you can make the charge. So you and your opponent can agree on
You'll always know. You'll always know if you're in range. You'll always know if you're in charge range.
Now you can move through friendly units, but you cannot end a unit on them. So you can actually have some guy you want to protect in the back. And if he's got a big movement, you can run him right through a unit.
Correct.
As long as he gets through the, which is with really big blocky units that can only move so far, it may not work. But with a character who's hiding right behind a unit who then, boom, runs through, pops through the front.
Right.
You have one guy running between the ranks. It can happen. Enemy units obviously block movement, and you always have to have the one-inch gap between friendly and enemy units to make sure that the opponents can clearly tell them apart. Okay, so you're charging twice the distance. Do you get a movement or a wheel?
What's that, with charging?
Yeah.
Let's see. It has to be partially in the front arc. Units champion can see the unit.
They can pivot once around their center up to 90 degrees.
90 degrees, yeah. So you do get one pivot.
They must, however, always use the shortest way possible, going around any blocking terrain and any unit in their way. Note that they must go through difficult terrain or if you can move through an obstacle, even if it would normally slow you down, you have to.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, moving through difficult terrain in this is half your speed.
It's like 7th edition.
Yeah.
Forest is an impediment to your movement.
So if... Now, if you could move around a forest and make it in your charge movement, but not through a forest, then you can't charge because you have to go straight line. You mm-hmm. can't angle around it. They must go through any area. They do not slow down the charge moves, but they cause them a penalty. So you don't have half movement when you're charging, which I didn't realize.
Regular movement slows you down. Charge movement does not. However, you suffer a penalty.
Yes, and we'll get to that in a bit, too, I guess.
All right. I don't know if I remember that when we played last time.
I didn't, but I don't think it came into play. But I don't remember.
I don't remember. Yeah. I bet you I did it wrong.
Flank and rear charges is simple enough. If you charge in the flank, you get double the attacks.
That's one of the key things to remember. If you have a quantity army against a quality army, get in the flank because whatever you have normally is doubled. And in the rear, it's tripled.
In the rear, it's tripled. So... Rather than just getting combat bonuses, you just have a better chance of hitting them because you're hitting them in the flank. Multiple charges is the same, sort of the same as war.
If you can have a multiple charge, you just have to declare them both at the same time.
Yes, and then you have to move them in a way that they can both get in. If there's not enough space for them to get in, then you just can't charge. You have to give them a different order. It literally says if you can't get them in, just give them a different order. So now... Let's see, defending obstacles.
The same rule in Warhammer applies in Kings of War. If you're not in combat, units have to be 1 inch away from each other.
Right.
There always has to be a buffer.
If someone's defending an obstacle, you measure to the obstacle. If you make it to the obstacle that they're hiding behind, you're considered as getting into them. Let's see, there's terrain. Terrain is either considered blocking, obstacles, or decorative.
Or difficult, I believe.
Or difficult, yeah.
Blocking, you go around it.
Yeah, impassable. You got to go around it. Obstacles are like fences, hedges, streams, and you can go through them normally, but you can't go at the double.
Correct.
Which I suppose would mean you can charge over them, but you just can't cross them going at the double. Because it takes time to clamber over them, I guess. Decorative terrain are like, you know, rolling hills and things that don't really impede your movement at all. That's just there because it looks nice. But then difficult terrain is half movement.
And for the most part, this will cost you, for every inch you move, it costs 2 inches of movement.
Yep. So that's simple enough. That's all the rules for moving.
Then we go into the shooting phase, and it's important to remember that shooting and magic is effectively combined, but all magical effects are a shooting attack. There are different ways of seeing them work, but... For the most part, the rules that work for shooting also apply for anything that looks like a magical attack.
Absolutely. And if you have, once again, if you have multiple choices, you get to pick one.
That's a key thing. Yeah, there are certain models out there that actually have more than one shooting attack at a time. I've got a guy with the Zap Special rule, which is a bit like a lightning bolt, and then he also has a heal.
And you don't get to do both. It's not like in a magic phase where you roll dice and you get so many, and you can cast as many spells as you can afford to cast.
Nope, just choose one. This model is choose a shooting attack. For this one, he is doing this.
Keeping it simple.
You can more or less shoot in any order you'd like.
Yeah, you just pick your units. Now, if you moved on the double, once again, you can't shoot. You cannot march and shoot, and certain things cannot move and shoot, but we already went through that.
Right. There are penalties to shooting. Range counts. So bows, crossbows, and rifles are 24 inches. Pistols, javelins, and thrown weapons are 12. And war engines are 48.
Now, you can shoot as long as your unit champion can see it. Remember, you draw a line of sight from that champion in the front center model. As long as he can see it, you can shoot at it. Mm-hmm. If you're more than half the distance, it's -1 penalty to your shooting.
Just like Warhammer.
If they're in undercover, they get a penalty. You get a -1.
If the champion can see more than half the target unit, they're not in cover. If at least half the target unit's out of sight from the champion, or at least partially obscured by intervening terrain, they're in cover.
And if you can't decide, roll a dice.
Roll a dice of decision, yeah.
Yeah, D6 it, exactly. Now, for each of these, you deduct one. So if you ever need more than a 6, how they settled this was simple. If you've got 10 attacks with this unit, so you're going to shoot, you're going to roll 10 dice. If the penalties make the difficulty higher than a 6, you only get half the shots.
So pick up 5 dice.
Yeah. You're still rolling 6s. You don't have to re-roll anything. But instead of, which actually works out the same.
Mathematically, it allows, in 7s, Warhammer, it allows for more potential chances, but you're still going to, most of those dice are going to go away by the filter of rods.
Right. So here they just keep it simple. Instead of saying roll a 6 and then take the 6s and roll a 4, they just say you get half the dice. It should work out the same.
Yep.
1 is always a miss, and
6 is a hit.
6 is always a hit. And when you roll damage, you just take all your successes, look at what their defense rating is, and roll that or higher.
That's right. There are some exceptions to this. There are some special effect shots, like Zap is an unusual one that ignores penalties.
That's basically a magic missile.
Right, 24-inch magic missile that always hits on 4s.
Yeah, it hits on 4 no matter what, so makes it a little simpler.
Makes it easy to kill individuals. Individuals, by the way, there's a -1 penalty to hit them also, like your heroes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like in 7th Ed, if you're a lone model, as a -1 to hit penalty. So.
Right.
Let's see.
There's actually literally a special rule called individual. You know, if it's a dragon is not really considered an individual because it's the size of a small house.
Oh, okay, right. That special rule is individual. You're right.
Right.
Then you mark down damage, and instead of taking away models, you just use counters or dice or something to say, okay.
Or glass beads or whatever.
This unit has taken this many wounds. And you keep them at the end of your shooting phase. Then you do those nerve tests on any unit that took damage. We'll get to the nerve test in a little bit. That's basically the break test, the equivalent of a break test.
Except instead of breaking and running and potentially rallying, if you fail your nerve test, you take that unit off the board.
Yeah.
So shooting attacks potentially can be a lot more deadly in this game. Because
exactly.
If you're shooting at a small unit, mm-hmm. you could break them.
Yeah.
With a good nerve test.
Or if you've got a unit that's already been wounded.
Yep.
And is not in combat at the moment, those couple extra wounds, every turn where it takes wounds, it takes that nerve test. And if you roll well enough, that takes them right off the table.
Where if you have a horde unit, often you can see horde units, the ones with a higher leadership, or what you think of leadership would be like dwarves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Dwarves in a horde formation probably have a nerve of 13 or higher.
Right.
Which would be, you probably don't understand the math now because we haven't explained it for the listeners, but
the higher the number, the better, and that number is freaking huge.
Right. You roll 2d6, and you add your damage, you subtract your nerve, and you want the result to be a 7 or less.
Yes.
So if you have a nerve of 13, -13 to your roll, you're not going to break for a long time.
Exactly. But smaller units might only have a nerve of 3.
Or 2. I've seen 2s, yeah.
So you roll your 2d6, you add the number of wounds the unit has taken to that roll, and then you subtract their nerve, which never really changes because you just add the wounds get higher as the time goes on,
so they're
which
more,
makes it
more likely to break.
And there's 3 results. 7 or better, they're fine. 8
seven
or 9.
7 or less.
I mean 7 or less, yes. 7 or less, they're fine. On an 8 or 9, they're considered wavering, which means you're allowed to basically halt or move back.
That's about it.
Or reform.
You shuffle your feet, but you can't charge anyone.
You can't shoot, you can't attack, can't do any of that stuff. If the result of the roll is a 10 or better, that unit's dead.
Take them off the board.
I mean, I keep telling this to people. It's kind of like in Blood Bowl when you do that armor break. At a certain point, you knock them down, then they're stunned, then they're damaged and getting taken off the pitch.
In a way,
kind of similar concept.
Yeah, Yeah, just, I mean, the chart looks the same,
yeah,
but the result
about, right.
is very different. You lose a unit off the board. A whole bunch of people
right.
are gone.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, all right, so let's see. So you've got the melee.
Now, melee, if you get into close combat, if you charge someone, effectively, this is, again, you just look at your stats. It's very, very simple. You look at your melee, which uh-huh. is a number plus. So if it's a 4+, you need 4+. You look at your attacks, you pick up that many dice. So if you have 10 attacks at a 4+, figure that 5 will hit.
Right.
There you go, 5 hits.
Now, you attack. Now, unlike Warhammer, I attack you, I roll to see how many wounds I do, and that's your defense rating. So that's already taken into account. So you don't get any save rolls. That's how many wounds you take.
Well, I have to roll defense.
Right. I'm saying you roll that defense to see if you wound, but that's, I mean, that there is no
that,
saving.
That is,
that
is
their
the
save,
armor
yeah.
save. And
right.
Yeah.
Everything is rolled into that wound roll, and then you just pile up the wounds.
It's truncating all of those rolls into 2 rolls.
Yep.
Do I hit? Do I wound?
Very simple.
Yeah.
Keeps it nice, keeps it easy.
Because, yeah, in Warhammer, you could have up to 4 rolls. Do I hit? Do I wound? Do you armor save? Do you ward save?
If I'm behind an obstacle, I'm sitting behind a fence, and you charge, you only measure up to the fence. If you hit the fence, it's -1 to your, for example, you normally need a 4 to hit, but I'm behind an obstacle, you need a 5. So, I'll clean this up, I promise. So basically, if I'm behind an obstacle and you attack and you charge, it's -1 to hit because I'm behind an obstacle.
Right.
It's a simple enough rule. 1 is always a miss, no matter what the modifiers are. 6 is always a hit. So then you pick up, you do the rolls again, you do the damage, you record the damage, then you test the nerve if the unit took wounds. They might have already tested nerve in the shooting phase. Testing nerve is what you want to get them to do. If you do any wounds on them,
you get to roll the dice to test their nerve.
Yes, which is actually, and
the reason it was designed this way is that you're the one rolling the dice on your turn.
You're attacking them.
That way, Alessio Cavatori wanted to make a competitive game that worked well for a tournament setting. And one of the negative strategies that you see people play is that if it is your turn, but your opponent is required to be a part of it, an opponent who is losing can stall, which is a negative gameplay tactic.
And on this game, as we get into it later, they'll talk about how you can actually play this game with a chess clock, where you are limited to your time.
So everything is on you.
Everything's on you. Your opponent never rolls a dice during your turn.
As long as you know your opponent's stats and you've got them near you, and so right now everything is free, so you have access to it all. You know what you need to hit. You know what you need to roll. You can tell your opponent to take that damage, and then you roll the dice to determine their nerve, and then hit the time clock, and it's their turn.
Absolutely. Now, they take that nerve test once again. And if they let's say that unit that took some wounds from you shooting at them, that unit with the big horde unit,
mm-hmm.
you gave them a couple wounds, you did a nerve test, they passed, they're fine, they're steady.
Sure.
Now, you get into combat, which actually that wouldn't happen on the same turn because you can't shoot into combat.
They've taken damage last turn from shooting.
Okay, right.
This turn, they're engaged in combat. You charged my unit that has taken some wounds.
I did 5 more wounds. Those wounds are added on top of your previous wounds. They are cumulative.
Right. Let's say I took 3 before. You gave me 5 more. I have now 8 damage. And shall we say that I have a nerve of 10?
Okay. So if you had a nerve of 10, I roll my dice. I add the 8 damage
right.
and subtract
so
your
average,
10 nerve.
Average roll of 7 plus the 8 damage you cause is a total of 15.
Minus your...
Subtract the nerve.
Which is 10.
And so that
so
leaves
then
a
my
result
is 5.
Now, the chart is 7 or less, you're perfectly fine. I'll be able to do my normal thing next turn. 8 or 9 is wavering, and wavering simply means that all I could do is halt, change facing or back, and that's it. In addition, no shooting. In addition, no charging. You're kind of stuck. Nobody
right.
likes to waver. But even worse than that, 10 or more, I'm routed.
Right.
Now, with a nerve of 10, I'm pretty high. But if my nerve was only 5 and you had done a total of 8, you rolled a 7 plus 8 is 15 minus 5 is 10. Now I'm off the board.
Now you're off the board. Now, there is still one other rule, and that is they have something similar to Insane Courage, which is called Hold Your Ground. If you roll double ones, and I was actually trying to figure out the math on this. There's one way. There's a point where... Let's you know, you could have a lot of wounds and make a really lucky roll and just not break.
So possible to stick around, no matter how much damage you have.
And so, but even if the negative for your wounds would take your roll way below 2, you roll 2 dice, you roll a 2, you stick. If you break a unit and they're off the board, you got 2 choices. You can either
just like in Warhammer, really.
Yeah, you can spin on your center and reform, shift, mm-hmm. Change your facing.
Yep.
Or you roll a D6. You have to either, now you get two choices with this. You either move forward the entire D6, or you can move left, right, or backwards half distance, just like before. You can sidestep or reverse, but it's the same. In fact, if you decide to go left, right, or backwards, then...
Are you talking about regrouping?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can spin in any direction you want. You can move directly forward D6, but you have to move the full distance.
Or you have you to can move even backwards move directly D3, backwards, but D3. You have to move this the entire... you have to move the whole distance.
I don't know if you can go sideways.
No, maybe you can't move sideways.
No, it's forward or backwards.
Okay. And if the unit doesn't break, I move back 1 inch. I disengage. This is sort of one of the rules that's in Lord of the Rings, I know.
I am not familiar. Okay.
Yeah, if the combat is fought and nobody's dead, the attacker backs up an inch.
You have to think of this in the same way as engaging a building in Warhammer. Regardless of the result, as long as both sides are still alive, they disengage from one another from 1 inch.
Right. If the attacker doesn't break them, the attacker backs up an inch.
Right.
If the attacker breaks them, then they're gone. But at the end of your turn, there will not be any units in base-to-base contact.
Correct.
So that's it for melee. And like I said, then it just gets to that nerve test.
That's it.
The nerve test is always the big thing. You just want to make sure. And like I said, I know when I first started, that was the confusing thing. And I know I've asked other people, that's the one thing that seems to be the most confusing thing in the game. But once you understand the formula...
Yeah.
My roll plus my wounds minus your nerve.
Roll plus damage minus nerve.
That's it.
Yeah.
And you can actually look, okay, I took 10 damage and I've got an 8 nerve, so I'm at a minus, you're at a plus 2 to your roll.
We end up saying like plus 2 or minus 2 to the roll.
Right.
You can start doing the math in your head and recognizing what you need.
Yeah.
So,
because the more damage, as the attacker, you want to have more damage than they have nerve because it adds to your roll as opposed to subtracting from it. That's
so
it.
So as long as you have a minus 5 to the roll or more, you're safe.
Yeah, basically. If you get a minus 5 to the roll or more, then even if they rolled a 12,
then you're down
still
to 7 and you're okay.
It's once you're getting under that you start to get nervous.
Should we take a quick station identification and come back and talk about some of the special rules in armies?
You know what? Let's just cover banners and musicians really quick.
Oh, good point. Yes, absolutely.
Now, we talked about banners and musicians earlier. Simple rule. If I'm charging you, you know when you charge into combat, you got that musician blowing the horn. That subtracts one from your enemy's nerve because you're just making that loud, screaming,
just
rushing noise.
Imagine they're playing like a bagpipe. It only sounds good when you're playing it.
Yeah. So you're playing it into combat, and so they're losing their nerve.
I love bagpipes.
I do, too. Yeah. Hey, I had one at my wedding.
That's true. Actually, that was my favorite part of your wedding, besides you getting married.
Well, I was going to say, gee, thanks, but okay.
Well, In the ceremony.
No, the bagpipe was awesome.
Yeah, it was cool.
Now, if you have a banner... Banner adds one to your nerve.
Because you're rallying around your banner. So even if you have a low nerve, adding a banner is a good idea.
Now if you're like me, because of the fact that this game is so inexpensive, I mean, as far as points-wise goes.
Points-wise.
I've been giving every unit who can take one a banner and a musician.
When you first start playing Warhammer, it's a really good idea to at least, if you're not sure what to do, maybe add the command.
Right. And in this one, you definitely want to take it. And basically, the worst that they can do is they neutralize each other out. If I've got a banner and you've got a musician, or if I've got a musician and you've got a banner, they cancel each other out.
Mm-hmm.
One last thing before we take a break that I want to talk about real quick, because I just said it, is when you're buying units, they encourage you to buy bigger units. If your main unit is 80 points, the double size, the next step up, is not going to be 160. It'll usually be 150.
I agree with you, but something to bear in mind in this game as we've been exploring the strategy, outnumbering your foe and getting flank attacks is a huge advantage.
Yes.
So
you definitely want to have some smaller units in there.
You want to have some MSUs, as we call it.
Yes.
Multiple small units to apply to allow you to threaten their flanks.
If you are a player who loved cavalry, if you have an all-cavalry Warriors of Chaos unit, you can use those Warriors of Chaos in your undead army, like I was using my Chaos Knights as undead riders. Cavalry is awesome in this game.
They do hit bloody butchers. They hit like a ton of bricks.
Yeah. I mean, their attack rating is a really low. That's good because
it's easy to hit. You need a low roll to hit successfully.
And everything on this is on a D6, and your cavalry's defense is usually like 5. So they have to roll 5 or better to wound them. It's sweet. They're expensive, but man, in this game... Because everything is so cheap. I mean, for those of you playing Warhammer, as I just said, I have a 10-man cav unit with a musician and a banner for 185 points.
One thing about Warhammer, I like it. I love the game. But one thing I thought I was going to miss that I didn't miss was all those additional rolls to find out the results of a combat. Like, reducing it to two dice didn't dilute it. It streamlined it.
Yes, very much so.
It's like, I was glad to get away with all those. Okay, forget the armor save. Forget the ward save. Forget all that stuff. I just want to know.
I've got three ranks, and you came from the left.
The combat was just as intense
without... And it's the second Tuesday of the week. So, I mean, I'm exaggerating, but you know what I'm saying. I love Warhammer, too, but...
The combat was just as intense without... And we were able to reduce half the die rolls to resolve it.
Exactly.
And it was like, oh, that took half the time.
But that doesn't take away any of the strategy.
No.
There's still all the strategies. Get to the flanks. Hit them with your shooting first.
The movement phase is that pre-planning where you get into the position to do the strike. I mean, sometimes you can look at a fight and know what's going to happen. But in a case like this, well, it's still anyone's game right now for us. We're still learning it.
We should take a break.
Let's take a quick one, and when we get back, we can start talking about the differences between armies, what differentiates one army from the next, and the special rules that go with them.
Rules, followed by how to pick an army, and then timed games, and then we're pretty much there.
All right, let's take a quick one.
Okay.
Hey, check out that guy in the Garage Hammer shirt. Who cares about him? Look at that guy with the Garage Hammer hoodie.
That's right, guys. Nothing tells the ladies I'm one of the gaming elite like garageware. So hurry to garagehammer.net/store, and soon you'll be the guy at game night that all the gamer chicks are talking about. Remember, boys, first you get your gear, then you win all your games, then you get the chicks.
That's right, boys. The only gamers we notice are in garage gear.
All right, we are back.
Kings of War.
Now, we know, right now there's the Elf Army, Dave, as you mentioned, as well as Undead, which is what you're playing.
Yep.
There's the Dwarf Army. I'm playing the Abyssal Dwarves, and the Orc Army is new. It's still coming out.
And it's not an Orc and Goblin Army.
It's Orcs.
It's Orcs, which was interesting because Christopher and I, they've already shown a model for the upcoming army, which looks like a...
Looks like a Goblin Army.
Well, no. That was the one after. The next one that they showed was the what looked like, if you were looking at a Warhammer, would be a Dark Elf Sorceress.
I'm not sure which one's coming out next. It's hard
to
tell.
That was the one that was under next, and then the other one was coming soon.
Okay, so we're aware of an evil elf army. We're aware of a goblin army.
Yeah, we hope it's a goblin army, because, man, when they showed the picture, it was a little goblin.
I'm pretty sure, because I'm looking at the orc army, and there aren't any goblins in it.
No, and that would be so cool to have the two separated. That would be another thing that differentiates them.
The closest they have
is
that they've got a goblin stabby sneak, which is not precisely a model. It's rather... an upgrade.
Yes, that's the upgrade. In fact, that's in the special rules. We played one of our upgrades wrong, I think.
I forgot to use one of my upgrades.
Which was?
The mutated throwing mastiff.
Oh, no, you did use it, but you didn't use it right, because I remember you rolled when you threw it at me. You rolled the dice, and you can keep rolling them.
Yeah.
Against Shambling, you get to reroll your failed two wound rolls. Those dogs really hate undead. I was reading it.
Well, I get to reroll against anything with the mutated ones.
Oh, yeah.
You know, let's go through it. Let's go.
You want to just go through the list? They're alphabetical. That's pretty simple.
Let's briefly touch on the armies. Each army has its own special rule.
Okay.
Now, the elves have a rule called elite. Dave, do you have the rules in front of you?
Yes, I have the rules. I want to get my army list out really quick.
No problem. Well, elite, in a nutshell, elite, what that means is that you get to re-roll,
missed to...
To hit and to damage.
Roll to hit when one of you rolls to hit or damage, you re-roll one die.
That's pretty significant, because what that means is, remember that damage is cumulative and doesn't go away. It's not like the difference between 1 point of combat resolution. It's cumulative over the series of the game. So
right.
Every turn, you're going to get to reroll one hit, and then you'll get to reroll one damage, which could apply up to...
That's potentially two extra...
Damage
or
per turn.
One, yeah. And because, like you said, because it's cumulative, when I first read it, I'm like, one die, they're not even hitting back. You're not subtracting anything from that.
Right.
Every wound counts.
So that means that one potential miss is becoming a hit. One potential missed wound is now a wound. So up to two damage per turn extra thanks to that one little rule.
Now, there's only one other good... they do have alignments in the army. There's only one other army with a good alignment, and that's the dwarves.
Dwarves.
And they have what's called headstrong.
Yes.
Now, when you roll that nerve test, seven or less...
Is
fine. Mm-hmm. Then there's wavering, which is an 8 or 9, and that's that you can only halt or reform or back up.
Correct.
Dwarfs, if they get wavering, on their turn they can roll a D6, and on a 4 up, they can ignore it because there's...
And they become steady again.
They go back to steady. It's kind of, it's sort of like stubborn.
It's, I would say that of all the special rules out there, it's the least beneficial because it means that you've had to do something wrong in the first place. But
yes,
that's partially made up for the fact that they have better stats in general.
And I think, but yeah, and the other thing is that I think the other rules are very aggressive, but the dwarves have pretty high stats and they're already pretty aggressive.
They're pretty good.
If you get in trouble with them, I think it's the one rule that's really nice because if you get that unlucky roll, there's a, you got a 50-50 shot of no, you're not crippling me.
Right.
Which is huge, and it fits with dwarf fluff in general because they don't really have any, but the abyssal, the idea of dwarf fluff.
The abyssal dwarves have the same rule.
They're
also
do.
Headstrong, so they work the same way.
Oh, okay, so the abyssal dwarves are the exact same. They are the evil alignment, but they're the same...
The same special rule that applies to the whole army.
Okay. Now we've moved into the evil armies. Now
you got your undead.
Yes, undead have the rule evil dead,
mm-hmm.
which means if... Anytime I inflict one or more points of damage against a unit, the unit that inflicted the damage gets to remove one damage counter. They get to heal one wound.
Huge.
And it, once again, you're saying, well, just one, but Christopher and I were talking. We have two hordes that clash. I do five, or he does five wounds to me, so I'm at five. Now I do five wounds to him. So now he's at five and I'm at four. He does another five to me, I'm at nine. I do five to him, I'm now at eight, he's at ten. A difference of two, when the difference between being fine and taking you off the table is three dice.
It starts to become, well, if people understand how 2d6 work, the average is seven. When you start to move the difference by two, left or right, you start to really change the odds.
And if you get to 10, I mean, the difference of three suddenly is, I mean, it's the
significant.
Yeah.
You can start counting on the odds to work in your favor.
And it really did help me out quite a bit when I was playing with that army.
Oh, you played it to the hilt, and you won your game because you used your abilities to the greatest effect. I lost because of attrition.
Which was
cool because it felt like I was playing undead.
Yeah. It's like, damn it. I can't
shoot through these guys fast enough.
And once again, it simplifies it. I don't need a magic spell. And this is no bagging on Warhammer. Okay, this is not replacing Warhammer, I don't think, for either of us.
Our main show is called Garage Hammer. So,
right.
Yeah.
But you always got to make sure they know.
Don't worry. We're not going anywhere. We like
Warhammer. Unlike just healing up a bunch of wounds off the back of the unit, and it encourages you to get them into combat. They don't get into combat, they don't get no healing. So
right.
If you're shooting them and they're losing wounds...
And yeah, but most people prefer to deal with the undead from a distance.
Yeah, they get in there. Now, the orcs have... The orcs have a great rule, which is called Crushing Strength. Now, a lot of these rules have a number in parentheses after them.
Yes.
And that will show the effect, either the number of dice you use or the modifier. All orcs have Crushing Strength 1, which means they get a plus 1 to their 2 wound rolls.
Correct. Crushing Strength is melee-based. Whatever you need to wound them, if their defense is 5, now you need a 4. Because 4 plus 1 is 5, enough to hit them.
Now, their basic orc unit is the axe unit, because they have axes.
Yep.
They have Crushing Strength 1. Now, great axes, who carry really big, great axes, have Crushing Strength 2. So now you're talking anything that you normally would have to wound on a 4, you're wounding on 2s. I mean, that's freaking huge once again. I don't see any Crushing Strengths more than 2 until you get into characters.
Right.
Which they have characters with Crushing Strength 3, which is just stupid.
It gets insane.
Amounts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting thing about the orcs here. They have no war machines, no war engines, but they do have a new unit type called large cavalry, because the orcs, if you think about what orcs are, like the general idea behind orcs, they don't want to stand and operate a war machine.
Well, they have fight wagons.
They have chariots and fight wagons. They want to get in close. They're charging towards you with any ramshackle machinery that they've got. They
right.
want to engage.
They have gore riders because they ride on gores, which basically look like giant boars, except they gore you with their fangs. That's
right.
what they do. So
they're gores.
Well, there's orcs. Look, I mean, and I kind of, without any fluff, just going from the names, which is pretty much all the fluff you have, I like these orcs. They're like, what are those guys? They're the axe guys. What are those guys? They're the great axe guys.
And those guys are the more axe guys.
Those
They've
are
got
guys
two
that
axes.
Have two axes. They're the more axes. They ride gores. Why you call them gores? Because that's what they'll do to you. That's a gore chariot. It's a chariot pulled by gores.
The orcs are an interesting army. They've got a lot of large cavalry, and they've got their own special rule on how they count for like building an army. if you've got a large cavalry, I think three or more models is a solid unit, which means a unit of three large cavalry means you can go ahead and buy a hero.
Which is cool because they're the only one, I think, that they're the only one that has it, aren't they?
Yep. That's new. They have no worm engines, though. None.
Now, they do have a flagger, which is equivalent to a standard bearer.
That's your standard bearer.
Which, talk about being cheap. Your standard bearer in my army is 25 points for a BSB. And theirs is 30. Their lord or hero is called a crudger, because I guess he'll crudge you. You can put him in a gore chariot. You can put him on a slasher. And you can put him on a winged slasher. That's a hero and monster. I'm assuming a slasher.
Be like a wyvern.
A wyvern and a winged slasher is one that can fly. I don't have any wyverns without wings, but.
Well, maybe, I don't know.
But that goes up a hell of a lot of, for the exact, almost the exact same stats. That all that extra movement and flying is an extra 115 points. So it better darn well be useful.
Orcs, for the most part, are the, in this particular game, orcs have, their melee skill is very good.
Yes.
The worst that they're going to hit you on is a 4+, and most of them are hitting you on a 3+.
Yeah.
Orcs, in this universe, orcs are very skilled.
Yes, but their defense is also a 4+.
Pretty bad.
And the only thing that's more, if you're on a gore chariot or rider, you got a 5+, and that fight wagon has a defense of 6.
Yeah, those are going to be hard to deal with. But across the board, their leadership, their nerve is pretty darn bad. Even the Horde, it only has 10.
Holy crap.
Their nerve is bad. They pretend to be disorganized, and with enough pressure, they will break.
Yeah, I mean, just to give you an example, folks, and I just looked at this for the first time. Now, these also, the Great Axe and the Morax are those elite infantry. They start with, they can be 5 models, 10 models, or 20 models, as opposed to regular infantry, which are 15 and 30 in this.
Yep.
Your 5-model Great Axe has a nerve of 1.
Yeah. Well, you're going to want to outnumber your foe. You're going to want to take tons and tons and tons. And when you see the opponent with that horde, you've got very limited options to shoot. This is not a shooting army. They've got one unit, the axe regiments or hordes. You can exchange their shields for bows, basically.
And they only hit on 6, and that lowers their defense to 3, which means that any modifiers, they're only shooting at half their shots.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's what I found with my undead, is I'm hitting on 6s, but then as soon as I have any modifiers, I get half the number. I pretty much tossed my shooting out the window. That the you can take bows in the undead army. It's just really not worth your time. To lower your defensive rating by 1 in order to get half your shots only hitting on 6s, it's like, and they give you the option, because it's a fun game, and they give you the option to take whatever you want within your army. But
if you really think
really
it'll
really
help,
gonna
yeah.
take bows, yeah. it's gonna suck for you.
Sometimes it's better to have the option to not than not have it.
Yep. Now the orcs do have a couple of specialty characters which are fun. And once again, it's very simple. The stabby sneak gets
is like an upgrade. It's not a miniature that you necessarily have to have, but it's more like an upgrade for the unit.
Right, and they only actually, these only go with the characters, like with your general, your Kudger, your hero model.
Right, right.
He can get a stabby sneak, which means he gets 3 worth of attacks that hit on 4s. And then after you do your dice roll, roll a dice, and on a 3 or less, the enemy gets rid of him. On a 4+, you get to use him again.
It's a bit like a magic weapon.
Yeah, it could on a 3 or less, it's going to be gone. They also have a zappy sneak, which you can give with some of the other characters.
Zappy sneak basically is the ability to take the zap spell, except it's orky, so it's not very good.
He gets a zap 1. It's 1 dice, and if he rolls a 1 on that, he shoots his handler instead.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that makes some sense when you consider that chances are goblins are going to become their own army.
And they don't want to be there.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I like the war machines. I like standing back. I like long spears. I like bows.
Now, I hope this isn't... I hope we're being really clear on this, because I know we're covering a lot of rules, but it's really not a lot of rules. I mean, we're on page 9 now. There's 3 pages left of rules, and it's 2 pages of special rules, and then how to pick your army. Oh, there's 4 more pages of rules.
We'll get through it.
And then I mean, simple, though. I mean, in an hour, we've covered 2/3 of the rules. Now, let's see. You can have a breath attack. You, and it's a breath attack parentheses number. Whatever that number is how many dice you get to roll.
How many dice, and the range of a breath attack is 12 inches. There's no template to speak of.
And it always hits on a 4. You're just, if you're within 12 inches, that's it.
The advantage of that is if you're going up against a target that might be very difficult to hit otherwise because of modifiers.
He's got a high defense. He's a single model.
Well, defense is to wound.
Right. Okay, right.
So, but, like, I mean, an individual. Like, if you've got a character who's individual, there's a minus one to hit him because he's individual.
And if he's at long range, it's another penalty. Right. If he's behind a little bunker or, you know, behind an obstacle, it's another penalty. On this, you is he within 12 inches? 4 up.
Yep, it tends to break the odds. The zap spells the same thing. You just need, you know, zap whatever the parentheses is.
Right.
And you just hit on a 4.
Crushing strength, we already mentioned. Whatever the number is after crushing strength, you add that to your damage roll.
There's a shooting version of crushing strength. Crushing strength is melee only, but for shooting, if you have the piercing rule, then it's plus 1 to your roll to damage on a shooting attack.
Or whatever the number is. Some of the bigger machines, like the war machines, have piercing 2.
The Abyssal Dwarf war machines, several, one of them in particular has a crushing 2. Or, I mean, a piercing 2.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought that, yeah, that's the heavy mortar, piercing 2. Mm-hmm. So if their defense is 5, you're actually wounding them on 3s.
Correct.
And if their defense is 3, it's 4, 3 or 4, it's anything but.
Anything
so
your
a lot of your basic infantry is getting pounded. Dark Surge, this is one of mine.
This is for undead.
This is really simple. If they have shambling.
Yeah, this is a shooting attack.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
You roll how many? That's Dark Surge with a number behind it, just
correct.
Like before.
You hit a Dark Surge 5, I think.
Right. So you roll your 5 dice, and it works exactly the same as the breath attack. Within 12 inches, 4 up. Once you do that, for every hit you inflict, you don't have to roll the wound. I got that many hits. My unit can move forward that many inches.
Well, let's talk about this in the undead, then. You used this to good effect. You had a guy who was able to do Dark Surge a couple of times, and your goal, of course,
well,
here was...
a couple different guys, because you only do it once a turn.
Well, with that character.
Oh, right.
But, I mean, what you were able to do against me was you sort of advanced slowly. You've got a couple of guys with the shambling rule, which means they don't break. I mean, they never waver, but they also can't march.
Right. Oh, that is... Okay, yeah. All undead pretty much have the shambling rule.
Almost all.
Yeah, almost all the undead. Shambling means you cannot march no matter what.
Or in this case, you cannot move at the double.
Yeah, you can't move at the double. And but that wavering, that 8 or 9, counts as a 7. So on my nerve test, if it ain't a 10, it's nothing.
Right, because they're undead and they really don't care. But so, one of the nice things for you is you were able to sort of advance slowly up. And once you actually had a chance to use this Dark Surge, mm-hmm. you had two characters who could do it. And you hit a big block in the center, and you're able to Dark Surge with one, and then Dark Surge with another, and shove that one main unit right into me.
Right.
I didn't anticipate it, and it probably cost me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because when he hit you in the flank, he got double attacks. And that
right.
was one character, but that was my Choppy Lord, and he had 5 attacks. So hitting you in the flank, he got 10. And being a Choppy Lord, I think he was hitting on 3s. So it was
something
just
like
it was
that.
Something
yeah,
stupid.
It was a good effect.
Now, this Dark Surge also works if I don't reach you, I have to stay at least an inch away, and I have to stay an inch away from, like, you know, friendly units and stuff.
But it's comparable to Van Hels.
If I do get into you,
it actually is very simple to grasp.
Right. If I get into you, it counts as a charge, but because the magic, this is a magic spell being cast by God, but it happens during the shooting phase. Let's say first I had a unit of archers. And I shot the crap out of that unit, okay? If I charge into you, it says here, with the Dark Surge, you treat this as a successful charge. However, the charge unit will not take the nerve test for the damage during the shooting phase. Because at the end of the shooting phase, anyone who took damage has to take a nerve test.
Mm-hmm.
But now that you're in combat, you don't take that nerve test.
Correct.
Because you're going to take the nerve test at the end of the combat.
Right,
so
right. That's
this
absolutely
Dark Surge
right.
is one of those weird exceptions to the rule.
Because what it's doing, yeah, it's combining shooting phase with suddenly you're in melee. And you could have been exposed to both, but yeah.
Right. Here's one of the fun ones, the Dwarven Throwing Mastiff. You have this.
I have the Mutated Throwing Mastiff, which is it's in the Chaos Dwarf specials or the Abyssal Dwarf. They work effectively the same way. It's it works the same way, but I got to find the rules because it's in the book.
Okay, so here is what it is. You release your Mastiffs, you roll 5 dice.
5 dice,
and
that's it.
It's 5 dice always hitting on 4s just like before.
What's then the range of this one? Is it 24?
I don't know.
Here, we can edit this.
A unit that is beginning, let's see, a thrown weapon. So what are the range of thrown weapons?
Oh, 12.
Okay. All right. So you throw a mess of a 12-inch range. You roll 5 dice. You take all your hits. You roll a wound. Every wound earns you another attack.
Correct. And it can keep going
and
forever.
It stays on itself until you've got no wounds.
Right.
Now, yours is slightly different. The regular Dwarven Throwing Mastiff will get to re-roll its failed 2 wound rolls against Shambling, which is basically just the undead.
Right.
Because the good dwarfs really hate the undead. Your Abyssal Dwarfs have the mutated one.
Which re-rolls damage against
everybody. So that can actually...
But it's 50 points. I mean, for the cost of a unit, I'm paying for one special item.
Which could, though, going up against, say, if you're throwing that against stuff that's single characters or stuff undercover, you know, it's only going to do 1 or 2 wounds on top of, you know, with those extra attacks, it might only get 1 or 2. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 1 or 2 wounds is a lot in this game. Even if you have a horde,
it does
1 or 2 wounds is a lot.
Yeah. Now, there are similar interesting rules for multiple different races. Now, the dwarves have the throwing mastiff. The abyssal dwarves have the mutated throwing mastiff. Your undead have shambling rats or dogs.
Yeah, the rats.
Undead giant rats
or are they dogs? And it literally says, or are they dogs at the end of every one of these. Same thing.
Oh, my God.
No, mine doesn't do the same thing as yours.
In fact, I found
this out and I bought it right away. It can only go with your skeleton units. It doesn't go with your revenant skeletons, which are like your grave guard. It doesn't go with your ghouls or your zombies. Only skeletons can take this. And for the bigger units, it can be up to 60 points. But this changes that rule. Earlier in the game, I told you about my Evil Dead rule
How many points is that thing? It's crazy. So, like, for every point of damage you do, you get a point back.
For every point of damage I do, I get a point back. Now, here's the thing, Chris. It's only with my skeleton units. And those troops are size 10, 20, or 40.
Mm-hmm.
And the costs change from 20 to 40 to 60. So it can cost 20 for a unit of 10. But for a horde unit, it's going to cost me 60 points.
Okay, so you're paying
And it's just my skeletons, which are my... Now, my skeletons only hit on 5s, and they are wounded on 4s. So they're not very tough, but this is an amazing bonus to give them, to keep them moving.
It adds resilience to a skeleton unit. Wow. And then, of course, the elves have the elven saber-toothed pussycat.
Yes.
The hero then counts as being equipped with a throwing weapon. It can be used once per game. Should be mentioned that the throwing mastiffs are also once per game. Can be used against only heroes or monsters, war engines, and units of infantry or cavalry up to 10 models. Roll 5 dice. Piercing 1 always hits on a 4+. And then they get to attack over and over again, just like...
Until they fail. But they got that piercing 1.
So piercing 1. So it's not going to get to reroll damage, but it'll get a bonus 2 damage. But it's limited as to its targets.
That comes to being equipped with a throwing weapon only once per game. Right. Okay, so...
Interesting.
You know what's different about this than the other one? Is the dwarven throwing things can be used
against anything,
and these are only against
certain targets like war machines, heroes, or monsters, or units that are smaller than horde, basically.
Up to 10 models.
Oh, up to 10, that's it.
Yeah, anything higher than 10 models, the cat just refuses.
Cat will not get out of the bag.
Fly is simple. You can move over anything, but you can't land on it. But as a consequence of being able to fly, one of the bonuses is you never take the -1 penalty for charging if they're behind cover.
It also means that they're nimble, which means you get an extra single change facing.
Nimble's a cool rule. A lot of characters have nimble.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, you know, during your movement phase, you get that 190-degree turn.
The one exception is no charging using nimble.
Right.
You still only get with the one turn. But like any other time, you pretty much can spin in a dime.
Right. Well, you get 290-degree facings, which could mean you can actually move around something.
Yeah, it means you can turn left and right.
Or you could just turn around and still move your full movement. You could literally turn 180 degrees, 290 degrees, one after another, and move your full movement in the opposite direction.
It opens the door, yeah.
Yeah. And basically, you can actually move almost in a 360 because you could turn 180 to the left or to the right. So you move any direction,
any full movement.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's heal, and a lot of my... I have this for a lot of my...
You're going to see that a lot for undead. You're going to see it a little bit for the elves. For the abyssal dwarves, you're only going to see it in rare circumstances. We can only heal our war machines.
Right. That's really weird. You only heal the war machines.
Mechanics.
They're mechanics. And once again, okay, he's got mechanics. I'm raising the undead, and the elves are healing theirs. It's all the same
rule
thing. It's heal. It's all called heal. It's got a number at the end. You roll that many dice. Every four up, heals back one wound.
Mm-hmm.
Super simple.
But each army is going to play very differently based on what they're capable of doing. You're going to try and play the attrition game. I'm going to try and sit back and shell you. The undead are going to try and shoot you from across the table with their guns. The elves are going to try and shoot you, and then they're going to hit you with 1,000 spears. The elven spears have a rule called phalanx, and that means that generally they're going to be adding +5 to the number of attacks they normally have.
Now, that's after all modifiers. If you attack in the flank, you don't add 5 and then double it. You double it
correct.
And then add 5.
Correct, correct. So whatever end result for the attacks, then they tack on 5 more for the phalanx rule.
What are the other rules? Indirect fire is mostly on war machines, and this means that if you're behind a bunker, you're behind that fence or behind that wall that's giving you that -1 to hit.
They never suffer that.
They don't suffer that because it's not coming at you straight. They're shooting it way
up
in the air.
Yeah, mortars have this. Yeah. But consequently, just like a mortar, just like a stone thrower, you can't shoot at something that's within 12 inches. Just like war machine or
right.
Warhammer,
yeah,
basically.
It's too close, right. Now, if you a lot of individual characters, and not all, have the rule individual.
Yep.
Which means -1 to hit them if you're shooting at them.
Mm-hmm.
And they get nimble. Individuals automatically have nimble, which means they
sense.
Get that extra movement, which means they can move in any direction. Like
you're
going
to see this on any of your characters that aren't 20 or 25 mil bases. But
yeah.
On the other hand, if your character is also mounted on a dragon, no, he's not going to be individual.
No.
For he is on a dragon.
Right, exactly. Now, what's interesting is the next rule is inspiring, which your BSB has it. Your standard bearer will have inspiring. Some of your characters will have inspiring. And that means if he's within 6 inches of a unit that had a nerve test done, the opponent must re-roll the nerve test if they get routed. So if Chris attacks me and he rolls the dice and he gets that 10 or better and they're within 6 inches of anyone who has inspiring, he has to re-roll it.
Right. My guess is you're going to see this a lot for many different armies, but I can see the orcs really needing it.
Well, and the funny thing is I could see that too. Not only that, but there's no 0-1 limit on standard bearers.
Nope.
And they're cheap. They can't be put in a unit, but you could literally take 3 or 4 standard bearers and space them a foot apart in the behind your units.
Very true. But again, remember that...
then you need a lot more infantry.
They're individual. There's no hiding. There's no lookouts there. There's no ward save. They're just out there.
Yeah.
So it's very easy. If you can see them, if your champion in your unit can see them and you have bows, you just... And you shoot at that one guy.
Right, but if they're behind the unit, and so they're probably at least maybe long distance, and they're an individual, so there's a -1 to that.
Then you suffer.
You're really suffering on your to hit. But I'm just saying...
Which is why the zap rules are really nice.
Plus, there's also those rules that if I just took 4 standard bearers, I got to have at least 4 infantry units of 20 or cavalry units of 10.
Right. The system balances it out. You can do that, but you have to have 4 units...
And if I only, let's say I only had 4 big units like that, and I took 4 standard bearers, then I'm not taking
your heroes, your monsters.
Lord carrier. Yeah, so you have to balance it. Now, I will say on this undead list I made that I whipped up here, I think I have a maximum of like 1,000,000,000 characters or something like that. I mean, it's ridiculous. Running through the list, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8... 9 units
mm-hmm.
that are 20 or more infantry and the 10 cavalry.
But again, that's a 2,000-point army. We've already said that might almost be too big for beginners.
Yes. But I'm just saying, once you get up to that, you can... Of course, then if you were taking all those 25-point standard bearers,
yeah.
You would lose at least one of those units as well because you got to make up the point somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, 2,000-point game. I mean, if defense is what you're going for, that could help. We already talked nimble. We covered phalanx. Oh,
one thing about phalanx I wanted to quickly mention was in addition to get those plus, 5 attacks if you're normal and 10 extra attacks if you're horde. But just as importantly, if your opponent has the fly special rule and they charge into your front,
they get a -1
because you're spearmen.
Because you got spears. Yeah. Yes. So the phalanx is good against flyers. Mm-hmm. We already covered the piercing rule. We covered the shambling rule. We covered undead giant rats. And then there's zap. Now zap, like we said, zap is your magic missile.
Could be anything. Yeah, fireballs, lightning.
Has a range of 24 inches, always hits on 4s, and is piercing 1. So it's, once again, -1 to your, or +1 to your, to wound roll. And zap just varies the stronger you are. Like, you know, like I said, they've got different lord characters. And My choppy lord's got a zap 3, mm-hmm. but my Healy lord has got like a zap 5.
He's more the wizard type.
Yeah, the more wizardy they are, the more dice they get on that attack.
Yeah, my big guy on the back of his great abyssal, he's got a zap 5.
Now this is the zap is the thing that drew my attention to the need for fluff. And you actually when we were talking about this the next day, mm-hmm. I brought that up, and that was the first thing you said is yes, everybody's got zap. Now yes, it's a one. It works, you know, but I said to you, I would really like, I like the fact that some guys have, this guy has the burning gaze, and this guy's got the flaming lead shot, and this guy's got
demon vase versus banishment versus fireball versus
lightning strike, and it's all magic missile, 2d6 strength, 4 hits.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a name to it, you know, and I don't even have a problem with giving it that name, and then you look up the rule on their special rules, and it says it's Zap 5. You know, if you just want to have a fancy name for it. But they even said, you know what? In this particular game, they don't even want you to waste time looking up a name of a rule you don't get to go find out it's Zap. They just freaking call it Zap.
Zap.
Little cheesy? Yes. You look at it. Like I said, the only complaint we've got is this is the lack of the fluff.
Yeah, Ronnie, you should maybe contact us here at GarageHammer.net so that we can start writing some nice fluff for you.
Yeah, we've already got ideas, and Christopher's a genius with this stuff.
I'm kind of chomping at the bit to do it, yeah.
Yeah, so picking your army, you know, pick an army you like. If you were going to play in teams or allied armies, you are free to mix units from other races in your army, which is a really weird rule. You can have allied armies if your opponent agrees, which basically means you can mix elves and dwarves, you can mix abyssal dwarves, undead, and orcs.
Now, right now they mentioned that there are good, neutral, and evil races. However, there are no neutral races yet listed, so that means more is definitely coming. And there are no human races yet, so you can't help but wonder when the human races are coming.
Yes. So please don't mix good and evil units in the same army, unless your opponent agrees, of course, it says. Games go 6 full rounds, which is, you know, 12 turns. You get a turn, I get a turn, you get a turn, I get a turn. We each get 6. The idea of the chess clock is fascinating to me. In fact, I ordered one today.
Did you really?
I want one really bad.
Oh, sweet. All right.
I found it online. It was less than $20. I mean, I'm just like, screw it. I want one.
And don't forget, for those of you listening now, you know that Game Preserve sponsors us. Game Preserve is a purveyor of chess clocks, so
yes,
look them up for your chess clocks.
Absolutely. Game Preserve sells chess clocks. Now, basically, if you want to play with a chess clock, what they suggest is you own, and this is interesting, too, on top of everything else, you get 30 seconds per placement of a unit.
What do you mean, just at the beginning, when you're setting up?
When you're setting up, to keep your to keep you honest. Keep it on that pressure. You got 30 seconds. Once my unit's down and done, you've got 30 seconds to put your unit down and done. Once all the units are deployed.
I like that.
Once all the units are deployed, you agree on a total game time, which if we're going to play a two-hour game,
2 hours, yeah.
We each get 1 hour. And while I'm taking my turn, because as Christopher mentioned earlier, Alessio wrote it where I can take my turn, and Chris doesn't necessarily need to be there. I mean, he wants to watch and make sure what's happening is happening, that I don't cheat.
Right.
Well, not that I would cheat, but you know what I'm saying. But the fact is, I roll all the dice on my turn. I do everything on my turn because I've got 1 hour total. If
because
I run out of time before
you.
That, if he's not wiped out or we haven't each taken 6 turns and I run out of time, that's my game. You can take a little more time in the beginning. You have more units. As units start getting deleted, as things start happening, but the... I can't wait. I think the pressure of that clock, just knowing the clock is ticking, makes you feel like, ugh, I gotta do that.
It makes you sweat. When you use a chess clock, you're exhausted by the end of it.
And you are paying attention, because not only are you watching what your opponent's doing, but you're now looking at the board going, what am I going to do? I need to know exactly what I'm going to do when he hits
your mind is going a mile a minute.
When you hit your timer, I have to already know where. I can't sit around... should I attack with this unit or that unit? Now, if you're really fast in the beginning, you know, maybe by turn 5 you've got 25 minutes left, then you'd be like, okay, I could breathe easy here. But I think by that time, the game should hopefully be turning, and you should know where it's moving and not need that time. That's a fantastic.
You let me know when you get that chess clock, because I would love to play a timed game.
Oh,
with
we're going to. Cool. Dude, I asked for one for Father's Day. Everyone looked at me like I was crazy. I asked for one last Christmas.
You're pretty crazy.
I asked for one last Christmas. Like, a chess clock? You don't play. I'm like, I have 6 chess sets. I love to play chess. I just don't play timed chess. So that's it. Let's see. Other timers. If you don't have a chess clock at hand, you can use a stopwatch, whatever.
You know what,
blah,
though,
blah.
But, I mean, you can always use these days people have iPhones or whatever you have.
Yeah.
Most people can just download something.
We suggest that each turn should take around 2 to 3 minutes per 500-point game. So they should say 10 minutes in a 2,000-point game, which would mean that an hour each.
That's it. 2 hours.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's you give yourself each an hour on your clock and – good on you. Make sure you also set a time limit for deployments. 30 seconds per unit works fine, says you.
Well.
Okay. And then the last ring is be nice. If you're using a chess clock, if someone gets a phone call or the kids are upstairs screaming or you need to check a rule or you're not clear on line of sight and you want to ask your opponent their opinion, let them stop their clock so they could just to do that one thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
don't be a jerk.
You'll have to see this in tournament settings. I think that when you – I know that –
Well, I mean, if you're playing in a tournament, I don't think you're going to have your phone out and all your other things going on.
Well, I think Kings of War is actually going to have a tournament at Gen Con, which is coming up. From this perspective of this show, it'll be 2 weeks. That'll be the 4th through the 7th of August, and you'll probably expect to see chess clocks for that one.
Oh, absolutely. So last page of the rules here are battle scenarios. You pick your army. You pick your battlefield. They suggest a 6-foot by 4-foot playing field.
Well, that's convenient because we happen to have access to those.
We happen to have lots of them. Then you put some terrain out. It's nice to put some terrain or find a third person. There's no rule on how much terrain. They said make it look nice and something you agree on.
They recommend less than you would think for the first couple of games until you get the rules done. Then you can start adding more.
Right.
In this particular case, less is probably better. Don't put as many forests as you would for Warhammer because you're not going to be able to scoot through them.
Oh, yeah. It's like in 7th edition. You'll see 2 forests, maybe 3, and that's it.
In 7th edition, you put a spattering. And you almost leave a big empty spot in the center because you need a place to fight.
Right.
Maybe that mindset is better.
You used to have to, yeah, remember?
Yeah, it was a rule, 24-inch diameter.
12-inch radius around the center board. Game length, they say, go the time. Now, there's 3 types of victory conditions. Now, this is really weird because they say that at the end of the game, so when the game ends, you do this before the game. It says when the game ends, who's going to win? And that must be what it was. We had someone who asked us a question who said, what do you think of these winning conditions? I like to know the conditions before I play the game. And I think because of the way this was worded, that's why they thought it. It says when the game ends, who's going to win? In order to determine that, roll a dice. On a D6, it's kill, which is just victory points. You need to win by 20% of the total cost. To be a win?
I think that was poorly worded. I think the interpretation... I understand what he's asking, but I think
you don't
really,
roll this at the end of the game.
You roll... I think you should find out what the scenario is at the beginning of the game.
Yes.
This is just oddly worded.
Yeah, so who wins at the end of the game? This is how you find out. But you roll in the beginning.
Right.
Then there's the pillage rule, which is you put D6 plus 1 objectives on the table. They have to be more than 12 inches apart from one another, and then it's capture objectives. You got to be within 3 inches, and nobody else is, and you're not
correct.
In combat.
So you defend your positions.
If you roll 5 or 6, it's kill and pillage, which is a
combination of the two.
Yeah, but basically, kill is victory points,
mm-hmm.
pillage is objective points,
mm-hmm.
kill and pillage is victory points, and then each objective is worth 100 victory points.
Right.
So. That's it. And deployment is exactly the same as a straight battle line. You've got to stay 12 inches off the center of the board, and you deploy on the long turn.
I would count on in the future. Now, Mantic makes their own little publication called Mantic Journal.
Uh-huh.
You can probably go into manticgames.com and order it if you want to. My guess is the more of these magazines they come out with, the more scenarios that they're going to come out with. But their website always has information for free as well, including new beta armies. All of this information, all their rules, all their armies, everything except the miniatures are free. So,
which is really great because, I mean, let's be honest, they've been selling miniatures now for, what, 3 years, 4 years?
Their miniatures might as well be free.
Yeah, I mean, their miniatures are cheap, but they've always been an alternative wargaming models line.
Correct.
And then now they have a game. And like I said, back in the very beginning, I mean, at first it almost sounded like,
well, they're getting a lot of heat for just being a Warhammer knockoff, so they're going to make a game
as an excuse. It seems like you're getting more heat than other companies, though, because Avatars of War doesn't get heat.
Yeah, but Avatars of War will make... They mostly make just character models, and lots of people, like, you can go buy a Reaper and make that your character model. You go buy this and make it a character model.
But what about now that they have a box of quote-unquote Berserkers?
Oh, that's true. That's true. Although theirs are nicer.
And Cyborg miniatures.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people make miniatures. I don't think anybody has made them in the 30 box of skeletons, 40 box. They're releasing full lines, which are completely interchangeable.
Or a mark of genius that they're the first besides GW to actually do it.
I have no beef with it.
I love it.
we've talked about, guys, you can go back and listen to some of our other earlier shows when we talk on news and rumors. I think we all agree that as far as model, the quality of models goes, I think GW is pretty much, if not at the top, they're one of the tops.
I don't think there's going to be a challenge from just about anybody. Even people probably who work for Mantic will look at GW's models and say, wow, they're beautiful, with the possible exception of that Manticore, which I don't like.
Well, there's always models you like or you don't like, but
yeah.
GW is the top of the line, and you pay for that quality.
You do.
And you do pay for it.
You pay out the nose for it, but at the same time, if you want a model, if you intend to compete in a painting competition, you're probably going to want to buy a GW model because you're going to want the best palette to start with.
Unless, of course, you're painting zombies or ghouls. Wow.
There is that. There's the thing.
It's funny because, there are four main models that I buy from Mantic for their Undead Army that I can use in my VC Army. They have skeletons.
Mm-hmm.
They have Revenant skeletons, which happen to look just like skeletons, but with a lot more armor.
I actually like the horses for the Revenants. What are the name of the cavalry?
I think it's Revenant Cavalry. I mean, it's
the Revenant Cavalry. I like the horses for the Mantic Undead more than I like the GW because they're just those. They're a bit cheeseball 5th edition or 4th edition skeletons. 4th edition. But
yeah, the Black Knights for the VC have those, the same kind of skeletons as the Tomb Kings
yeah.
skeleton.
It's those skeletal plastic.
The weird skeletal plastic horse. Theirs look like sort of rot, a little more of a rotting horse, just a skeleton.
It's a zombie horse.
It's a zombie horse, yes.
I like those.
Although I did, in fact, I was just posting, Cranky Lawyer sent gifts. He got Harrison some Kador models, and he did got me those. I mean, I mentioned on the show that I would never buy them, but I would love to have the Blood Knights.
Right.
And he sent me a box, which I can't thank you
enough,
Cranky.
That's a kingly gift.
That's a $100 gift. Yeah. I don't know what I did to deserve that, but it came
nothing.
Right.
I can't think of a single thing you did to deserve it.
I tell you what, it came right before he showed up in town, and I mean, I did say I would pick him up at the airport, but I was hoping that was all he was expecting.
See, this is why I'm going to continue to pick on him. Because I got a pair of GD boxing gloves that are pink.
Pink
you
boxing
got Blood
gloves.
Knights. And you you're the one who with
a two-income
house.
You got a lot of cool gifts for your son, like this T-shirt that says, "My dad is adequate." Even though he's a topher.
You're lucky. You're lucky this is a clean show, Cranky. Although, but, you know what? I'll take a picture of it. That I did what I said I was going to do. I put that that shirt up at work. I hung
oh,
it
did
up.
You?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
With a picture of my son underneath it.
But so, now the skeleton.
No, thank
now,
you
first
for the
of
shirt,
all, part Cranky. Of the problem is because in this game, your actual individual models don't matter. Because they're part of that block.
In Kings of War?
In Kings of War.
They don't. I'm not sure what you mean by they don't matter.
I mean, if I've got a horde of 40 models,
mm-hmm.
I've got a horde of 40 skeletons, and I just... See, Mantic's models, when you buy them, some come already holding swords and shields.
Yep.
Some come with spears and shields.
Well, thematically...
So if you're going WYSIWYG, I mean, they come about half and half. So if you just want to put the half of the models that you bought in the front row, if they have spears, put all the spear guys in the front, the other guys in the back...
There's some WYSIWYG that does matter. The reason I bring that up is that, for example, the Abyssal Dwarves, I have an option for most of my guys. They come with hand weapon and shield, and they do not have crushing strength. They're just regular, and the defense is a 5+. They're hard to hurt. I can the rules say you may swap your shield for a two-handed weapon for free. You now have crushing strength.
Does
one.
It come with an option to put the?
Yeah.
So, but what I'm saying is my skeletons. If I buy a box of 20 skeletons, I cannot, because of the way they're sculpted, already holding, most of them are about half of them are already holding weapons.
Hmm.
I'm going to get some who come holding spears. I'm going to get some who come holding axes.
Okay.
And I'm going to get some who have a hand open and I could put either one in. I can't buy a box of 20 skeletons from Mantic and get 20 spear guys or 20 without doing some work.
It's a shame.
I wish that would change. WYSIWYG. But I mean, that's one of the ways they keep it cheap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, someone said to me today, they go, "Oh, Mantic zombies, you get two torsos, two sets of legs and three different heads, and that's not enough variety." But those heads can be the way they've
molded it. There's five or six different heads. There's different pivoting methods.
Because like I said, and I have pictures on our website of mine. Some of them are reaching up straight forward. Some of them are leaning sideways. You can actually put the torso just they have little the bases that come with like a hole in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just stick the torso in, so it looks like it's crawling
out of the ground. There's even one where it's just the feet walking with like a spinal cord sticking out of it.
I did a bunch of those. You can stick instead of sticking the torso in the legs, because where you get the legs, they've basically got that hip socket.
Mm-hmm.
And so the top part has got the ball end. So you can adjust and bend the pose. My ghouls come with two legs, two bodies. In fact, the skeletons, the zombies have two legs but three torsos. The ghouls have two legs, two torsos. But you can twist it, bend it, have them up or down. So even though they look very similar and it's obviously they're all the same line.
Yeah.
The pose, I mean, it looks like there's more than two different model types there. There's at least four because you switch up the legs and the bodies, and then the positioning of the heads and the torsos do give you a variety. But once again, some of their models don't allow you to do WYSIWYG conversions as easily if you're going from using GW models for Kings of War, easy peasy.
Mm-hmm.
Using Mantic models for GW works most of the time.
Right. You will end up having to hide a couple of guys in the back who don't have what you are supposed to arm them with.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've got a couple of guys where, like it or not, they're molded with shields.
Right.
And the last time I played, a couple of my guys had to hide in the back.
Because they're not supposed to have shields.
Right.
I will say this, and we've said it 1,000 times, the ghouls and the zombies are better. I know GW is going to be coming out with at least new zombies soon.
Well, they're coming out with new wraiths.
Oh, we just saw those. Yeah, yep. We'll talk about those next episode of Garage Hammer.
Yep,
those
yep.
are beautiful.
Yep.
I actually have Mantic Wraiths, which now went from the metals, which were 5 for $25, to the plastic resin, which are now 10 for $25.
Oh, it'd get better.
Yeah, yeah. Now you can only take five Wraith units in this game total,
mm-hmm.
And they just rank up normal, unlike being skirmishy stuff.
Right.
One of the cool subtleties of this game. I have Wraiths, which there's no ethereal rule. You can't wound them unless you have magic weapons. But their defense is a 6+.
So it ends up playing the same way. They're just very difficult to hit.
They have a better defense than my knights, who have a 5+.
Right.
They have a 6+. I mean, it's almost impossible to hit them.
I can hit them, but I can't wound them unless I roll that very rare number.
Exactly. Guys, it is so deceptively simple.
What looks like a simplistic system ends up being an elegant system. You've got the miniatures. Sit down one night, download these rules, and just try it out with a friend. Play about 1,500 points. You'll be surprised with how much fun you're going to have with a game that's 12 pages long and cost you $0.
Yeah, because, you go through this and you're like, okay, which should I take? And I had a tendency to automatically go at Horde, and I'm like, oh, they got a higher nerve. But, it's not just if you have double models, you get double attacks. Because, like I said earlier, similar, my unit of 10 infantry skeletons.
Mm-hmm.
That's two rows of five. They have 10 attacks. My unit of 20, the full regiment of 20 skeletons, four rows of five, still only has 10 attacks. The guys way in the back aren't getting their attacks in.
Yep.
You know, but then when I go to a Horde, now I've got 20 attacks because I've got all that, you know, all that set up. Move that Horde. And plus, once again, and it's not how many models are in base contact. Like in GW, if you've got a three ranks deep and I hit you with a Horde in the flank, only four or five guys are going to get to attack. Here I hit you in the flank and I've got 20 attacks. I now have 40 because I have a Horde of guys hitting you in the flank. And suddenly, I don't know why it works so well. I know why it works so well, because Alessio's a goddamn genius when it comes to writing.
He did his work. He did his job right.
Like you said, you were surprised. I hit you with the Revenant King, who has 5 attacks, hitting on 4s.
Well, yeah, that one little individual guy who was able to sneak into my flank and then doubled his attacks, then he hits like a train. So suddenly, 10 attacks, of which 2/3 hit, and with crushing strength, right?
Yeah, I hit on 4, so I only hit on half, But then I have crushing strength 1, which means...
So 5 out of the 10 hit, and then you're wounding me on 3s instead of 4s.
Oh, it was vicious. He did like 7 wounds. It was brutal. I got it because I rolled like a monster. I rolled stupid good for my hits, but then my wounds were just crazy.
Well, no wonder
too.
You won then. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. You put him on a Pegasus, and here's just the differences, folks. You put him on a Pegasus, Vampire Lord on a Pegasus. He's still got Inspiring. He's still got Crushing Strength. This guy's got Zap, Healer, and Dark Surge, whatever. He can fly, so his speed is moved up to 10. You know, but he hits on 3s. His defense is a 5. And he gets 10 attacks because the Lord and the Pegasus all mix up together. I don't have a... I don't have a... I thought I had a dragon.
Dave, talk out loud.
I am talking out loud. I have a Pegasus. Yeah. I don't have a dragon.
Oh, okay. Well, that's okay. So just use your Vargolf and just pretend.
I have a Dark Lord on a Pegasus, a Vampire Lord on a Pegasus.
Yeah, have you seen the model?
No.
It's cool.
Oh, is it? I was going to say, I make him all sparkly. It's like a...
Well, it's a pretty decaying white Pegasus.
Oh, it's not a
you
pretty
can make
white
him as
Pegasus.
Sparkly as you want.
Pretty white Pegasus with Edward on the back. I've come to take you away from all this.
And ribs sticking out. And
oh,
you can make fun of your own army.
I do. War machines. Oh, here's the thing. War machines are simple too.
War engines. Yeah.
War engines. Are they in range? Yes. Okay. Good. So. Your attack, you get, and the tougher the machine, the more dice you get to attack. It doesn't, you have this.
There are no templates, so there's no guessing, you know, there's no going, let's be gentle about this and decide that it's this many. It's like, okay, I know exactly how many dice I pick up. I know exactly how many dice I need to hit, and very simple. It's a tournament player's game, but it's simple enough where people can just sit down and play it. And the thing is, it works so quickly that you can actually play more than one game. Like when Dave and I played, the first time we played, we had the rules in front of us. We were reading the rules to ourselves as we were trying to learn.
Talking through it.
And it still took us only 2 hours.
2 hours for a 2,000-point game.
Which was bigger than we thought it was going to be.
Yes. Now, I have to admit, I loved playing a huge game.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
When I first started playing Warhammer 4 years ago, when I first started writing my armies, and I started just taking units and then saying, okay, how many points do I have? When I write a 2,000-point game, it took me about a year to break the habit of writing a 3,000-point list and then having to peel it back, having a sense of where 2,000 is.
Mm-hmm.
This game is where I pictured 2,000 points to be when I started playing Warhammer.
It was just enough. Now, in 2,000 points in Kings of War, chances are awfully good you're not going to see the flank of anything for a long time.
Until you break something. And then instead of rushing forward, you choose to just reform and face their flank.
Mm-hmm. But an awful lot of fun. I guess the long and the short of it, guys, is my enthusiasm should be obvious here. It's a big two thumbs up for me. I love this game. I was delighted to say that, I mean, for a free game... I'm gonna be playing it again on purpose, not because I just want to try it, but because I really want to continue to play this particular game.
It's so funny because both of us really wanted to try it and really wanted to play it, but there was always something that came up, and it was like,
yeah, whatever.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
Let's play some Warhammer.
We already know
how to play that.
And I feel so stupid because it's like I think at least for me, I don't want to speak for you.
Go ahead, just say it.
But in the back of my head, I was just like, how good can it really be? Like, I know, and I'm not saying this because it was 12 pages, but even reading through the rules.
Well, when I read through the rules, I started to get enthusiastic to try it. But,
yeah.
But you still don't know what it feels like until you play it.
And
it's like looking at programming code. It's like, well, it looks like it should work, but until I hit run, I don't know.
And, but when we did this, it really worked out amazingly, perfectly well. I absolutely love playing this game. It's so funny. There's not the wide variety of the huge variance of choices that you get in Warhammer.
But the thing is, they're coming.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'm not even talking about the different armies. I'm talking even in individual armies. When you look at these lists, they don't seem to have the huge, you know, there's about 7 or 8 special things they can have. And you're not tricking out your heroes. You're not, and in fact, much like War Machine or Hordes.
It's closer to War Machine Hordes where you don't have the variation. When you look at something on the table, you already know what it is.
Yes, this is exactly what it is.
It's a combination of those units that you already know that makes the difference.
Yeah, you have the rare variants of, I've got, and even then, like I said, there's only 2 pages of special rules for the rare variants.
Right. But even so, the combinations that they've provided, the army lists that they have, the individual special rules that they create for each individual new race, means that you are starting to see increasing variety in how the game can play out.
And I'm very excited to see what other armies they come out with, and not just for the models, because I have most of the models for most of the armies they could want to come out with. I mean, I have two-thirds of the Warhammer armies, and, you know, their armies seem to be, at least in part, interchangeable with other gaming systems. So
yes,
I have a lot of these models for other gaming systems. So as they come out with new lists and new rules, I can just start playing them. This is a home run.
Yeah, I agree.
This is a total home run.
So much better than I thought could be possible from a system like this. I thought that anyone else who tried to write a 12-page game would have half a game, but this is a complete system, and I'm delighted.
Yep.
What a success. Congratulations.
Exactly. And just as a side note, as we're wrapping up here, they just recently came out with a new game called Warpath.
Yeah. Now, I don't know very much about it yet. I haven't been able to get through the rules, but obviously this is a science fiction game.
It's their science fiction game. They've come out with two army lists, although no models yet.
Well, it's all beta right now.
Right. But I'm looking forward to seeing models.
Well, they've got that looks like...
One's called Forge Fathers, which, if we're going to compare it to something else that other people are familiar with,
it'd be the squats. They're squats.
And the
How
other
cool.
one...
Cool!
Well, and this is what confused me, because the other army is called the Marauders.
But they're orcs.
Because they list about seven or eight races in their game, although they only have lists for two races. They list seven or eight races because they are allied with certain races and not with others. And the Forge Fathers and the Marauders are allies.
Interesting.
They're listed as allies in the game, which is why I was like, well, why would you even fight against allies? I mean, you can fight anything. Good
bear
can fight good.
Bear in mind that could just be something to throw us off because it's a beta rule. I don't know.
It could be, but yeah. So it says that they are actual allies, but...
Maybe that's just garbage. Maybe all that list of all the other races is just nonsense. It's filler.
Who knows?
I really don't know.
But I will tell you this.
But how interesting would that be? I mean, they've already done one major divergence just within Kings of War. Orcs and goblins do not work together. They're separate races.
Right.
Which I like.
Yes.
I've only seen that in one other system. But... perhaps they're going to do something interesting and different with Warpath. Perhaps they're really trying to make it.
Now, I did read over the rules, and they're very similar in many ways to Kings of War.
Well, I've dug out all of my round based miniatures from Warzone and Chronopia. So whenever you want to try a game of Warpath, I know you've already got orcs from 40K,
right?
So I'll just pull out some proxies. We'll just give it a shot.
They do have all sorts of rules. I mean, they've got infantry, which everyone has guns. They've got war engines. They've got tanks. They've got bikes listed. They've got big screaming ships listed. They've got rules for all of it. A lot of similarities, like I said, to 40K. Some differences that, like I said, I've actually been doing a lot more looking into 40K. I know that you have, listening to other podcasts.
Yeah, I don't follow 40K.
And I actually have been, because I'm interested in it. And I can see some of the rules. Like I said, very similar to Kings of War, you get a lot more line of sight rules because they're skirmish. Everyone, you know,
everything has to see. Yeah.
So suddenly you get the whole. I mean, so there's extra rules based on that, which always gets a little fidgety, mm-hmm. especially in my opinion.
Especially if they're all skirmish.
Right, it's all skirmish. They've cleaned up a few of the rules, a few of the things that can tend to get abused by larger armies with it when you have to have skirmishing. Mm-hmm. I know they've cleaned up a few things. It seems tight, and I'm after playing this, I'm so excited to see how Warpath works.
I'm looking forward to trying it. I like science fiction miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. We'll look forward to a future episode of Garage Gamer where we talk about Warpath.
Yeah, and what else? What have we got? We just in the last 2 days on our forums, a bunch of people have asked for a Dungeons & Dragons review.
Fourth edition. I just mentioned that I'm trying to work together with if you're interested.
To make a campaign.
Yeah.
Who's it? Is it the real McCoy?
Yeah.
Did you see his stuff on the forum now?
No.
His avatar is a black and white headshot.
Of Skip Stevenson.
And underneath it, the little quote says Skip Stevenson. Which, by the way, that's freaking awesome. I love seeing stuff like that. So he's got Skip Stevenson. He actually asked for it because he remembers us saying how during an episode of The Phoenix Prince, Harrison got D&D for Christmas, mm-hmm. and he was playing some of the little sample adventures. So, and a couple other people said, yeah, hey, we played D&D too. We'd love to just hear what you think of 4th Ed D&D. So we got requests. We got that stuff coming up.
It's an entirely different creature from D&D as you've played it before.
Oh, I know. That's what I've heard.
It's D&D after somebody played too much World of Warcraft.
That's what it sounds like.
And the way I say that makes it sound negative. It's both good and bad, but if you're a real diehard for 3.5, people who love 3.5 are going to hate 4th. People who've never role-played before in their life are going to love 4th.
Right.
And there's not a lot of in-between.
Yeah, you're right. There's some in-between, but it seems like a lot of people... I've heard a lot of people... When I've heard the negativity, what I've heard is we went back to playing 3.5.
It's from folks who already know 3.5, but 3.5 is a bit exclusive. I guess what I mean by that is 3.5 takes a lot of learning.
Yeah.
There's a lot under the hood with 3.5, which means that you can really make an interesting character. But for someone walking into it fresh for the first time, you take a look at the rule book and you go, sweet Jesus, this is going to take me forever. I just want to play. Can I just play? And the learning curve is steep. Now, yeah.
And they've simplified it, which, as you've seen with 8th, people said they simplified it too much.
Let's say that again. They simplified it.
Yeah.
They did indeed simplify it. It's much simpler. Is it too simple? I don't know the answer to that. It's role-playing is still role-playing, but there's still an engine under the hood.
Survey says?
It's simpler.
Sorry. Someone had to give an answer.
The one thing they did that I don't think anyone would argue with is they made magic users more... They made them better to play.
Okay, right, yes.
Because in, like, you remember in old edition D&D, it's like, okay, I've got my magic missile. Pazap! I killed that orc. Now I'm just going to hang out for 45 minutes and practice with my darts because that's all I can do.
Oh, it was the worst. I'm sorry. It was the worst. Playing a wizard in D&D, level one wizard, was the worst game ever. I hated it. It was terrible.
And now you can cast that magic missile every round. It's like, what do you do? Oh, I'm going to cast my default spell. And then you have certain spells that you can only cast once per, and they call this encounter.
Yeah.
Which means, like, in a fight, only
day.
Once. Yeah, exactly. It just that works easier. And for beginning players, it's very simple.
You know, it's streamlined. It moves quicker. Does it have all the stuff that old D&D has?
Nope.
No. Can you sit around and have a really fun game with it and not have to worry about all that other stuff?
Yep.
Sure thing. All right, we're hitting close to the two-hour mark, and this show's only supposed to be an hour to an hour and a half.
Well, let's wrap it up, especially since we're no longer talking about KOW.
Yeah, this is going to want to get trimmed, I bet you. But so we will have something coming up soon. We may be talking Hordes.
We could be talking Hordes.
We're going to be talking 40K eventually because I'm playing. I've been pulling out my orcs today and looking at them and sorting them because Steel's going to help me get it all put together.
Okay.
So we got something coming up soon, and hopefully it won't be another 2 months between Garage Gamers. We'll hopefully have one.
Well, it's been a busy couple of months for Warhammer.
Yeah.
So, all right, guys.
All right, folks. See you soon. And
as always, thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, and tune in for episode 30 of Garage Hammer in a couple of weeks.
Podcasting you.
Bye.
Right, let's do the yah-yahs now.